Let me ask you, how was this last week for you? How was it for you personally? What was your main focus in the past week? What things were you having to concentrate your mind and your time on? Perhaps this past week was more busy than usual. Perhaps every week's busy. Perhaps the title of your past week would be one of busyness. Busyness. Well, being busy in the days that we live in, well, that can't be avoided, can it? And we live such busy lives, as it were, such, I hope, purposeful lives, but our time is so often quickly taken away. Which brings me to this point. Should a Christian lose focus of what is the main thing? And the question is, if you were a Christian, did you lose focus of what is the main thing this past week? What is the main thing? What is the main thing? And what is the main thing for you? Is the main thing for you the same main thing as it is for me or for another person sat next to you? And what is the main thing in terms of what the Bible states is the main thing? Whatever your focus this last week, let me ask you, was it a right focus? Was God at the centre of your focus this past week? I would be bold and suggest that for most people, the focus this past week was not right, was not what it should have been. Indeed, not what it should be. Now, was that you as well? Was your focus one that was not what it should be this past week? I would suggest the bulk of the people, even those who would profess to be Christians, that their focus was not right. How do I know? Well, I'll tell you. But first, I would like to disturb you. And I can't think of putting it any other way than like this. That we have had a tragedy in our church this past week. An unexpected shock. The loss of a dear and a loved one. And I want to disturb you this morning because I want to awaken you out of any inner slumber. Let me ask you, what does Christ mean to you this morning? If Christ means little to you this morning, indeed, if Christ in your life means little, the Son of God, Jesus, the Saviour, the Holy One of God, the Messiah, the Redeemer, if he means little to you, then I long that I can wake you from a deep sleep. But the sleep that you are in, if Christ means little to you, is not just a sleep that is deep. It is a fatal sleep, because it is a sleep of death. It is a pathway that will lead to death and to judgment. And if you are in the sleep of death, oh, that I could awaken you this morning. But the tragedy is, though I can be blunt, and though I might shock you, I'm not able to shock you in the way that I would like to shock you. I'm not able to disturb your soul. That is something that God alone can do. All I can do is shock you, wherein in your mind you're saying, how rude that man is. How objectionable. That's too blunt. Some of the things he says. I can only warn. I cannot awaken anyone. And so for now, if you are someone to whom Christ means nothing, then for now, I must leave you in the sleep of death. And I will address others. I will address those who ultimately, by addressing others, I may awaken you who are in the sleep of death. So let me address those who profess to be Christians. Christian, that's you, if you're a Christian. Christian, are you a slumberer? Are you half awake? I don't mean because you stayed up late because the clocks were going back and you thought, well, I can have a longer night out or whatever. I'm talking spiritually. I'm speaking to your soul, as it were. Are you a slumberer in your soul? Is your focus right? And if your focus is not right, well, let me describe you. Let me describe you this morning. If you're a slumberer, if you're a Christian, yet you're a slumberer, you're like the tree man. You know who the tree man is, don't you? The tree man was a man who was blind. And Jesus came along. And Jesus performed a miracle wherein sight was given to the man. But when he was asked, "What do you see?" he said, "I see men walking around like trees." You see, here was a man who once couldn't see. "I was blind, but now I see." Ah, but this man, although he was given sight, it was, as it were, disfigured. He wasn't seeing properly. So he could see, but not as he should see. Now, if you're a Christian who is a slumberer this morning, you are the tree man. For you see the truth. You see something of Almighty God. You know Christ, but not as you should know him. And though you see something of Almighty God, you don't see him as you should see him. Your sight is not as it should be this morning. Now, if that's you, then together with all those of whom this applies, we have a problem. A big problem. Now, I'm not going to stand here and point a finger like I was doing earlier or accuse you direct. May the Spirit of God do that. As I just throw out a few suggestions as to what might be wrong. You see, there are those who are Christians, but they are double-minded. They're double-minded in that they're too taken up with worry. Too taken up with worry to enjoy the Lord. Is that you? Are you a worrier? Are you so taken up with worry that you're like the tree man? You don't see properly. What are you worrying about? What things are you worrying about? What things trouble you? Things that are in this passing world, perhaps? Material things? Well, we all have needs, of course. But there's no need to worry about them. Maybe you're worrying about another person, which, to an extent, is understandable. Because if it's a loved one, you care for them, you're concerned for them. But we're not to be worriers, are we? And the question I would put to you, if you're a worrier, and therefore double-minded, is, why aren't you trusting him? Why aren't you trusting him for his promises? Why aren't you? You turn to James. I know I've asked you to turn to Isaiah. Keep your finger in Isaiah. Turn to James chapter 1 and you read in verse 6 where James has been saying how we can go to God to ask him for things that we lack. In this case, he's talking about wisdom and that the Lord will give generously. And then he says in verse 6 of James 1, he says, but when he asks, when a believer asks, oh, he must believe. So a believer's got to believe. He must believe and not doubt. Because he who doubts is like a wave of the sea, blown and tossed by the wind. That man should not think he will receive anything from the Lord. He's a double-minded man, unstable in all he does. So I'm a Christian, but I'm a worrier. And my worry gets on top of me at times. Therefore, I'm double-minded. It's some of you, Lord, some trust in you, but what am I going to do? Then there are those who are too worldly-minded, too focused on the things of this world. Maybe it's ambitions and things like that, or maybe it's just sheer rank materialism. But too worldly, too much of a worldly mindset. Is that you? Is that you? Are you worldly-minded? Are you double-minded in that way, let's suggest? You know what Jesus said, don't you? He said how no one can have two masters. You can't be devoted to two masters. And he went on to say, you cannot serve both God and, the NIV says, money. Mammon. Mammon. The God of materialism. Two heads. Double-minded again. Worldly-minded. A third type of tree man, Christian, is the one for whom sinful lust pervades their thoughts, internal thoughts. Is that you? Is that your mind? What's the focus of your mind? Is it filled with wrongful lust? Is it filled with things that the Bible would describe as sinful? The often said illustration of this is, if you were told that a video was going to be displayed of your internal thoughts, how would you feel? How would you feel? But I would add to that, well, you needn't worry if that's going to happen, because the people who are watching it are probably having the very same thoughts themselves. And that of Christians. Jesus said, there is nothing concealed that will not be disclosed, or hidden that will not be made known. What you have said in the dark will be heard in the daylight. What you've whispered in the ear, in the inner rooms, will be proclaimed from the roofs. Your thoughts will be revealed one day. Are they embarrassing to you? Has the devil got you captive to fear? Is God too small because the devil has become large? I don't mean that you have an image of the devil as being somehow almighty, but what I mean is that he's gotten in with his fiery darts to suggest that God isn't that big after all. That God can't be inquired as to that. That God can't be expected to help as in this. God is small. And maybe the human heart is biggest after all. Is that you? Have I got your attention? Have I got your attention this morning? I would like to ask you to ignore me as a person. Don't think much of me. If you don't, that's fine, because I don't either. I don't think much of me. If you're a unique person, you'd be the only one in the world, if that's so, who actually thinks over much of me. That would make you unique, wouldn't it? But don't do it. Don't do it. Don't look at me, as it were. Ignore me, but listen to the message I want to bring to you this morning. I would like you to turn to Isaiah chapter 26, and I'm going to read verse 3, where we read, of the Lord, the you is the Lord, you will keep in perfect peace him whose mind is steadfast, because he trusts in you. If you have a notice sheet, I put it in the New King James. You will keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on you. I think that settles better. It's easier to remember, and I'd love you to remember. that verse this morning. The King James is even more beautiful, more poetic. Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on thee. Now, whichever version you want it in, I don't mind. So long as you receive those words and keep those words. You see, the NIV is actually more accurate because some of the words in the New King James and the AV are in italics because they're not actually in the original. But they help to give it the flow. And the reality is that the NIV goes on to say, because he trusts in you. Because he trusts in you. So the one who we are to be steadfast in, as it were, the one whom we're to be stayed on, is the one we trust in, is him. So the other versions have the right text anyway. Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on you. That's a promise. It's a promise. The perfect peace of God. It is a promise to you this morning. And it is a promise of inner calm. Inner calm. Now there might be an external storm, but it's a promise of inner calm. Calm in your heart. That no external situation arising can disturb your mindset. If your mind is stayed on him. If your heart, your thoughts, your focus is steadfast on the Lord. So it's a message about the focus of your mind, Christian. Where is your mind focused? Is it going all over the place? Where is it focused? The one who is fully focused on the Lord is the one who will be kept in perfect peace. What do we know about these things? What do we know about the peace of the Lord? Only the one whose focus is fully on the Lord can know these things. You will keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on you. Such a person may well experience more trouble, may well go through trials far greater than I might go through. But internally, they will remain calm. That is a promise of God. It's not me crossing my fingers and saying, I hope so. It's a promise of God. Stand on the promise of God. He promises, if you keep your mind on him, you will know his perfect peace. Perfect peace. You will remain calm. It is a heart that is being spoken of here. A heart that is held captive by God. Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace. Keep him to be kept captive. God will keep you captive. Thou wilt keep him captive. Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace. Whose mind is stayed on thee. We'll be held captive by God. But not only that, and in a sense even more importantly, captivated by God. Because the one whose mind is stayed on him is a person who is beginning to realise something of the almighty, magnificent being that is God. And so not only are they held captive by God, but they're captivated by him. And everything else grows strangely dim. And the heart that is captivated by the Lord, well, nothing can disturb that heart. You see, God alone has perfect peace. God alone has perfect peace. There's never been, has there? There's never been, never mind a century, there's never been a year, there's never been even a week when there hasn't been conflict of some kind or other. And often in our own lives, maybe many of us have experienced lives that are filled with conflict. But much of that is external. I'm talking about internal? Do you have peace within? Now, we can get a measure of peace from various remedies that are out there, leaving aside things like medication and alcohol and all that sort of stuff. We can get a relative peace through focusing our mind on certain things, training ourselves and what have you. But there's nothing that compares with God's perfect peace. The mind that is trained on God's perfect peace is perfectly settled because there's nothing greater. You see, God himself, as I started to say, God alone has perfect peace. Nothing can take away from God's peace. Nothing can happen, not just because God has foreseen all things, not just because of that, but because God in his being, in his person, he's complete. Nothing can add to him. Nothing can take away from him. He is a unique being who has and knows perfect peace. He doesn't depend on anything external to bring him that peace. It's within. And you see, when he makes a promise, therefore, that he will keep in perfect peace the one whose mind is stayed on him, it's a promise he can fulfill. I can make promises. I made a promise to remember tea, and I actually remembered it this morning, to bring tea in because we'd run out of tea. But I nearly forgot. There was something else we nearly forgot as well, which I'm not going to tell you now because it's a surprise for a certain person. But, you know, we easily forget things. We let one another down, but God doesn't. Now, the Christian who holds their mind on him, their mind is steadfast on him, is given by him a measure of his peace. Given a measure of his peace because in focusing upon him and realizing who he is, his characteristics, if you want the word, his attributes, the kind of God that he is. Well, that fills us with a sense of wow, and a sense of awe, and a sense of wonder. And by faith, and indeed faith is there, isn't it? Trust in the Lord, it says in the next verse. And it says it in the same one as well, in verse 3. Because he trusts in you, trust in the Lord forever. You see, and by faith, we take hold of that, and we trust in that. That this God who is immense, magnificent in every way, that when he makes a promise, he has the arms, as it were, the everlasting arms. He has the ability, he has the wherewithal to be able to deliver on his promise. And so, the Christian whose mind is stayed on him has a measure of his peace because they understand who God is. But not only that, the promise includes the peace from God. In other words, God's overwhelming your soul with a sense of his person, with a sense of his presence, with a sense of his reality. But more on that anon. If your focus last week was like the tree man, distorted focus. You're a Christian. And like the tree man, you saw things. So you saw something of God. And that was pleasing to you, no doubt. And a blessing and a cause for you to seek to worship him. You saw something of God. You looked, as it were, in your life a while for him. In other words, you sought him in prayer. And maybe you sought to see him in your daily life. But then, all too quickly, you see the busyness of life. All too quickly, you settled into normal, mediocre living. And troubles came, and they threw you. And they'll throw you again. Because it's only the one whose mind is stayed on him who will have that perfect peace. It doesn't mean to say you won't have troubles. You'll have more troubles. But how much better to be able to deal with those troubles with an inner peace and a calm than an outward appearance of what's going in, an outward panic, because there's panic in the heart. So we have the perfect peace of God. And I want to suggest this to you at two levels. And the first level is this. Level one is peace of God that is perfect. Prepare well and you will do well. That's become for me this last week. I'm trying to make it a kind of a saying that I keep up here. Prepare well and you will do well. Prepare badly and you can expect the consequences. So for example, if someone's a teacher and thinks, oh yeah, I'll just, you know, wing it as I do my lessons, they very quickly maybe find that they're struggling, particularly if it's something where people are going to be cross-examining them. Maybe it's you're a university lecturer and you've got a new topic to lecture on and people are going to be asking questions about that. And you haven't researched, you're very quickly going to come undone, aren't you? If the Chancellor of the Exchequer was to hold his red box up on that budget day and not have prepared his speech, he wouldn't be the Chancellor for very long. Some would say that might be a good thing, but I'm not getting into that. If our Prime Minister went to Prime Minister's questions on a Wednesday and hadn't been briefed beforehand as to the kind of questions that he might be asked, he could be in all sorts of trouble and very quickly embarrass himself. That would be quite a sight, wouldn't it? Some of you might be pleased by such an experience. But I put that to you because bring it to your own life. You need comfort. You're going through a tragedy. You're sorrowing. You're taking part in something new, a new endeavour, a new way in your life. Or just ordinary day-to-day living. Not necessarily something new. How are you going to cope? You see, prepare well. Do well. Start the day with the Lord. I don't know if you do that. I know many of you do. Perhaps most of you do. And even if all of you do, that's wonderful. But let me reinforce it. How important it is to start the day with the Lord. Now this is not a good luck charm. That if you forget to do it, oh dear, things are going to go badly and what have you. It's not like that. It's about focus. You will keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on you. How do I get my mind on him? By preparing myself. I come before him in the morning. I come before him when I rise. So that I prepare my day with the Lord, so that as I go into the day, he is with me. Prepare well, and you will do well. The Lord will be with you. But not only will he be with you, your mind will have a greater sense of that awareness, and your mind will have been pre-prepared with a focus, so as to react as a Christian. So as to react how you should. So as to be able to say, ah, hang on, whoa. A peace is within, you see. And I can stop. And I don't go hell for leather into the particular thing. I prepare myself. I begin with the Lord. I set my mind on him. I seek him at the beginning of the day. Not midway. Through the day. And when you're attacked in the course of the day, however that be, whether that be the devil's attack, whether that just be confrontation, you know, human at a human level, as it were. Well, we're in a spiritual war. You will be knocked. You will get times where you're knocked. And indeed, some of us, most days perhaps, experience that. In such times, when we are attacked, when we are knocked, then, as it says in the last part of that verse, trust is the key. Things are all going wrong. Trial upon trial. Yet when trial comes, what am I doing? Ah, my mind is stayed on him. And so I trust that, Lord, though this is something difficult, and I don't know at this point how to cope with it, Lord, I trust in you, because you are the all-seeing God, and you are the all-powerful God, and you are indeed in control of all things. And I just commit to you this difficulty, Lord. and I go on my way in peace. Same as in uncertainty. It's uncertain to me, Lord, as to what to do. It's uncertain to me, Lord, as to what's going to happen. And I find, Lord, that fear is welling up within me. But Lord, I trust. I trust in you. I believe. Help my unbelief, Lord. I trust in you that you will, because you know my uncertainty and you know the situation. Nothing is uncertain to you. I trust that you will use it to bring about good, because all things work together for good for your people. In the same way, fighting fear. Fear grips. And fighting fear. You have to fight it. Don't give in to it. Fight it. Fear grips. Mind that's stayed on him is able to draw strength and gain back peace. But then, of course, things happen that are perhaps take away that focus. Sudden attack, as it were. Let me introduce you to the three R's. Think of a general of his army. And there they are, they're bivouacked in a field, they're camped there, and unexpectedly an enemy launches an attack on them, an offensive. And they're taken aback by this, and they're put into disarray. And the captain or the general has two choices. He can either say, charge back at them, go for it. But everyone's all over the place. Or he can say, let's retreat. Let's retreat. What does he do? He looks at the situation and he very quickly weighs it up. And he says, the best thing to do here now, because we're in disarray, is to retreat. And so there's you, at a spiritual level now, Christian. It's a spiritual warfare that you're in. It's a similar kind of thing. And something's happened. And maybe it's a confrontation. And if you're an aggressive person naturally, then the natural reaction is to charge back. And if you're not, then the natural reaction is to be timid. And to give in where perhaps it wouldn't be right to. What's the best thing to do? Surely the best thing to do is to retreat from the situation. To retreat from the situation so that you can gain yourself time to regroup, as it were. I'm thinking of an army, but regroup. In other words, get your mind away from that panic, away from that situation, and regroup in order that you can refocus. Refocus on the Lord. So when I say retreat, what I mean by that really is just get away from that situation. Otherwise, lest you do things that you'll regret. That'll either embarrass you or dishonour the Lord. For you're being over-aggressive in your response. Retreat. But regroup. In other words, settle your mind down with prayer. And refocus. Refocus on the Lord. And then charge. But then you can, in a sense, you know, properly as a forefar, re-evaluate the situation, can't you? And think, well, this is the best thing to do. Now, when I say prepare well, and you will do well, by faith, we should believe such. We should believe that when we prepare well, the Lord will be with us in that. And the Lord will bless us in our daily lives in that way. And that the Lord, though he will use certain trials, the measure of faith that we have is a measure that is given in order to enable us to stand under that trial. And maybe for our faith to grow. But there's so much more. There's so much more. That's level one. And level one is for every one of us. I suggest this morning that level one is this. Look, you will keep him in perfect peace whose mind is steadfast because he trusts in you. You will keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on you. Stayed on you. Prepare the day with the Lord. Focus your mind on him. Prayerfully and reading his word and seeking his peace to guide and guard, in other words, be with you throughout the day. That's the ordinary level, as it were. That's level one. My three R's are a suggestion. You might be able to apply that in a better way or look at it in a better way, a different way. I don't mind, but, you know, we should be seeking to be God's people in our living, our daily living. And that is a witness to those around us. When they see us all flustering around and squawking like a headless chicken or something like that, what does it say? What does it say of our faith? Prepare well, you would do well. But now there is so much more. So much more. And oh, that I could engage every heart here. Oh, that I could speak to every one of you. And that every one of us would be challenged by this part of the message and take this away. It is this, level two. It is the heart that is enlarged by the Lord. The heart enlarged by God. We sometimes talk, when we talk, some of us, about our understanding of church history, of people from the past, and we talk about a certain person, and we say, oh, that one was a giant of a Christian. By faith, they did such and such. You know, you've got the Hall of Faith, haven't you? Hebrews 11. And they're giants. Men and women that are listed there, they're giants compared to us. But what was it that made them so? What made them giants? Well, I know it's God, ultimately, but what made them giants? Some of them were greatly gifted, undoubtedly. But it's not that, because many people have been greatly gifted, and you can quite easily abuse a gift, can't you? And sadly, tragically, there are those who have been greatly gifted and they've abused their gift. And they've fallen into the swamp of pride or something equally bad and sinful. So what is it? What is it that made these giants of the past, the giants that they were? What is it? Well, I would suggest to you that it's a heart enlarged by God. A person who has gone on from the ordinary and has seen a new vision of Jesus. A person who has known an inner reality of God beyond what is the normal Christian experience. And I'm not talking about something that, some sort of feeling that we can somehow drum up through getting ourselves excited. That can happen. But that's just human emotion. The heart enlarged by God. What happens is the God who is real becomes more real. More real. And very real to them. And they are overwhelmed with him. Overwhelmed. Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on thee. You see, this is just, to me, a lot of what I'm saying now, you could say it's just hot air. Because, come on, the reality is, I can't spend 3 hours a day on my knees seeking for some kind of blessing from God so that the rest of the day can go on and I'll keep this peace. It's just hot air what you're talking about. But it's not. It's not. God is real. You believe that? God gives you a measure of his peace. You believe that? And you've experienced that. But I'm telling you, there's more. There's more. Perfect peace. Perfect peace. Glory. Glory itself will be a place of perfect peace. Because everything that is sinful will be removed, yes. Because we'll be made perfect, yes. But what does that mean in terms of this peace? It means we will be with God. It means we will be fully taken up with him. It means we'll be consumed in him, as it were. I don't mean that in the Hindu or Buddhist sense where we will cease to exist. What I mean is that our focus will just be so taken up with God that nothing else will matter. Did I go to glory after my wife? Oh, I can't wait to get there so I can see my wife again, says the man. But if he's a true believer and she's a true believer, he won't be taken up with her. He won't be bothered with her for a zillion years. Be Christ who'll be all. Because he is everything. And the heart and the mind that is taken up with God, overwhelmed with God, begins to see now in this life something of what will be reality in that which is to come? Now, what do you know about these things? Do you want to know about these things? The mind that is held fast, that is stayed on him, sees clearer the magnificence of God. Everything else is as nothing. And that God is there for you through your troubles, through your grief, through your loss, through all manner of different experiences in this life. It's not a day for small comfort. We've been living in times of small comfort. I don't think it's a day for small comfort. I think it's a day for saints everywhere to begin to rise up, or actually to fall down, to be on their knees and seeking for something more from God. Because I don't know about you, but I've had enough. I've had enough. And I'm not saying that in any way disrespectful to the Lord, or, you know, he's done so much for me, but I've had enough with me. That's why I said to you before, you know, if you don't think much of me, well, neither do I. I've had enough of me. I don't want my gaze to be taken off of me, 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 me. I don't want it to be on you either. I want it to be on him. On him, and him alone. Think of those who are in the sleep of death. Think of them. You bring the gospel to them, and there's no response. They have no interest. It has no impact on them. And they have no sense of God. Why is that? Well, it's the sleep of death, isn't it? You can't wake something that's dead. You can slap a dead man, but he won't respond, will he? It's the sleep of death. What do they need to see? What do they need to see? Ah, says a brother, they need to see their sin. They need to be made aware of how sinful they are and how vile and how despicable in God's sight. Well, they need to know their sinners, to be sure, yes. But that's not what they need. What they need is to see God. When they see God, then those other things come into place. The moment someone sees God, and then they gaze down and see themselves, oh my, I'm in trouble. I'm in trouble. Now I see my sin. You see, the problem we have is we're trying to show people their sin. They don't see it. They have no interest in it. We're trying to, in a sense, show people God in that somehow. But we're doing it on level one. We've seen God. We've seen something of him. But we're operating in level one. It's days where not much happens because not many people are interested. Because God is not big, God is small. Level one experience. It's not a day for small comfort though. We need to rend the heavens. Well, we can't rend the heavens. We need to seek the Lord who can rend the heavens for him to come down and make this a day of great things. The question for us is, Lord, how can we show you to a needy world that has no ears? How can we show you to a needy world that is in the sleep of death? And the answer is that we need to see him. We need to see him for ourselves first. And until you and I begin to see him, nobody else is going to see him. A little one here, a little one there, maybe. God graciously is working. He will always work. He will always build his church. But until you and I begin to really see him, we will not have an impact. So let me ask you, as I try to draw to a close, let me ask you, how magnificent is God to you? How magnificent? Could you not catch a vision this morning? Could you not take up a sense of urgency of our day? I could spend ages, but we've done it many times in sharing these things, the state of our world, the state of churches, and save our own lives and these kind of things. You know the criteria. Do you catch the vision? Do you catch it? Do you desire it? Is it possible? Is it possible? Well, it's the promise of God, isn't it? Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on thee. It's a promise of God. We need a larger view of God. A larger view. You see, there's more to the Christian life than you or I know or experience. So much more. I've already said we shall have it in glory. But we can taste now. We can begin to taste now and prepare ourselves for that which is to come now. And His glory upon a believer does that. I've read you testimonies of some of those giants and some of the experiences they had with God. They were transformed as a consequence. And that's what we need. Only we must reach out. We must reach out. We must seek Him. We must tell Him how urgently we need Him. How desperately we need Him. And we must show Him that we truly do need Him. By not letting Him go. By not letting Him go. Pray. Believing His promise. And if you don't believe the promise, take up a scripture. Take up that man who came to Jesus and said, "Lord, I believe, help my unbelief." And his son was healed. He had a little bit of measure of belief. You believe that God can do these things, don't you? There's a little bit of faith. "Lord, I believe you can do these things, but oh Lord, I don't quite have faith to believe that you're going to. Help my unbelief, Lord. Help my unbelief. Give me an urgency. Give me a sense that you really are going to. Begin a new work in me, Lord, in this way. Show me that you really are going to do something, Lord. I can catch hold of that." You see, I have to say, you read of times of revival, and what happens is you have people, one or two, a few maybe, and they've got this, they've caught a vision. They can't let go of it. They won't let go of it because God has come to them and implanted that in within them, the seed in them of this vision. Of a glorious new day. A day of heaven, but on earth. Catch the vision. Catch the vision. It's for now, isn't it? Isn't this the age? Isn't this the day when the Lord will come in His glory and bless and build His church? Seek Him. Seek Him. Seek Him. And go on seeking Him. Ask Him, and go on asking Him. Plead with Him, and go on pleading with Him. And don't stop seeking Him until He comes. Don't do that. Don't let that happen. In a day of spiritual decay, only such a view, only such a vision will do. You will keep in perfect peace him whose mind is steadfast because he trusts in you. Trust in the Lord forever, for the Lord is the rock eternal. He will fill with peace the mind that is stayed on him.